All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? Do you guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars?
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox!
I have to possess this comic!
Baseball's the breakfast cereal!
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book!
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Episode 3D.
Coming right at you.
It's the most ridiculous title ever.
How are we going to do 3D? It's a podcast.
We'll figure it out, I'm sure.
I don't even like it. I'm already disillusioned, and we're 4 seconds in.
It was your idea.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want the credit for this one.
I know. Sure, good stuff you want all the credit for.
Right.
The shit I get all the credit for.
That's how it works.
That segment sucked. Well, it was your idea.
I'm okay with that.
I got two words for you. Hoth 2014. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the first time.
So, 3D.
3D. Speaking of 3D, we might as well get right into the news segment this week with the ridiculousness that continues to be...
The what?
The ridiculousness.
Okay.
That continues to be the Superman movie. So not only are they going to be releasing it in IMAX, in addition to screens everywhere...
This is the big screen Superman Returns, helmed by Bryan Singer, right?
Sadly, yes. Yes,
okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
So not only is it going to get an IMAX release, which is pretty common nowadays for some of the bigger hits...
Right, didn't V for Vendetta got an IMAX release?
Did it? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, so this will be following in V's footsteps for this year. It was, they've decided to take 20 minutes of the film, random 20 minutes of the film, and turn it into a 3D segment for the IMAX experience. So you're going to be getting 3D glasses. There'll be some random on-screen visual cue.
Right.
And it'll be 3D Superman flying right at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's pretty awful.
Is that it?
That's about it.
Bryan Singer is an asshole. Yeah. What? Why? Why?
Because the movie doesn't already have enough problems.
Because there has to be more bells and whistles than simply it being a Superman movie. Without Christopher Reeve, with a guy who looks like Christopher Reeve, with what sounds to me like a bad storyline.
Right.
And now on top of that, let's throw some 3D into it.
Because 3D works so well.
And let me tell you this. The last time I was at IMAX was last winter. I went and I saw
Polar Express
in 3D, which was fantastic.
Okay.
Animated film.
Sure.
Was already kind of that three-dimensional feel to the animation.
Sure.
And when you actually add three-dimensional with the glasses and everything, that was spectacular. I mean, it was really quite a different experience than seeing the film in its regular theatrical release. Okay. And I can even see where maybe seeing Superman in IMAX might be a pleasurable experience.
Sure.
I don't see the need for the 3D.
Well, the question here I have for you with the Polar Express wasn't the entire film in that case in 3D? It wasn't just a segment of it or portions of it?
No, yeah, it was the whole film.
Okay, so That's another big problem I have with this. They're going to somehow cue you visually on screen to put on a pair of 3D glasses for some 3D segment. Now, I don't know if it's going to be 20 consecutive minutes somewhere in the middle of the film, or if it's going to be a couple of short segments randomly throughout the film. But either way, why would you want to disrupt the audience?
Yes.
You're going to have a bunch of people in the audience fidgeting around for the glasses that they forgot where they put 20 or 30 minutes ago or an hour ago.
It just, it seems like you're taking an experience which is escapism. Movies are escapism. You go to movies to escape, and you're giving the audience assignments and things to remember and stuff they have to do to enhance their experience of this film. Why not let the film stand on its own 2 feet? Polar Express was an augmentation of the entire film, creating a whole different experience. This is simply, isn't it cool that Superman can fly and it looks like he's flying right at you?
Well, the whole film seems ridiculous. So this is just a little bit more ridiculous on the top of the pile.
Yeah, I'm getting so disillusioned. And speaking of Superman Returns, Matt, I happened to be at the Big Apple Comic Con, which is the New York...
many times a year.
Several annually. I don't know how you would say that. Multi-annual? No, that would be... Well, anyway. I was at that con this weekend, and I happened to pick up my first and... Probably my only Superman Returns action figure. I got the Clark 2 Superman figure, which is the one that you can either, you can turn him into Clark Kent or you can turn him into Superman.
Right.
They do this usually with every Batman Superman or Batman line.
Sure, sure.
They do a figure like this. And, I mean, it looks okay.
Yeah.
For a figure, it's not terrible.
Likeness.
It's not extraordinary. Yeah. The likeness seems okay. Again, not extraordinary, but not far off the beaten path. It is a 3D representation of the character, though, so, you know, I can enjoy it in that sense.
Right.
But getting back to the film, I don't get it here. I think they're ruining the film experience by having them concentrate. Am I looking for whatever the little visual cue is? Did I miss the visual cue? And what if I blinked at the moment the visual cue happened, and then other people are putting on the, am I supposed to put on my glasses? I think it takes away from the film.
It's exactly what I was saying. You know, there's enough distractions in a movie theater nowadays as it is, between cell phones ringing and people talking, that you don't need people fidgeting with their glasses.
Why don't you say what you want to say?
I'm not saying nothing. I plead the fifth.
Why don't you say it?
Nothing.
Why don't you say it, man?
Moving right along. There's enough distractions in the theater already that you don't need people fidgeting around for 20 minutes looking for the glasses that God only knows where they placed them.
You mean minorities, don't you?
I did not say that.
You do.
I did not say that. I plead the fifth.
You meant minority teens, didn't you?
No comment.
That's why I go in the day. When they're at school.
Right. While I'm at work.
Oh, right. I forgot. What, I work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have a bit of just the tiniest little comic bit of news here. While we endure Marvel's and DC's ongoing crossover madness from Marvel Civil War and from DC Infinite Crisis.
Right.
That's pretty much dominating the comic news. But I did find one piece that made me a little happy. Robert Kirkman and Phil Hester are working on a new ongoing Ant-Man series.
Wow.
Which is pretty exciting. Ant-Man's a pretty cool character. And Phil Hester is the guy that did, amongst other things, he did The Wretch.
Right.
And he did the Green Arrow stuff with Kevin Smith.
Right.
A couple years back for DC.
Great storyline.
Which was great stuff. Hank Pym, the quote here from Kirkman says that Hank Pym is a big part of the book, but the man behind the suit is going to be a totally new guy. So it's not going to be the original Ant-Man in the suit. It's going to be apparently a new guy.
Ultimate Ant-Man?
No, it's not an Ultimate book.
Oh, okay.
Or at least that's not what they're saying here.
Okay.
Kirkman says that there are actually two guys in possession of the suit, Eric O'Grady and Chris McCarthy, who are two low-level S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who, for lack of a better term, steal the Ant-Man armor accidentally. And then I guess the story kind of progresses from there. What's cool about this is Ant-Man is a pretty, you know, great little character. And
sure.
He's not used very often because his alter ego, Hank Pym, is actually has been several characters mm-hmm. in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And the fact that they're shifting this off now onto apparently two different guys, whatever, that's I'm interested to see how they're going to handle that.
Sure.
I wish they would do this with Yellow Jacket also, spin him off into some other guy, but we'll take Ant-Man first.
You never know. Baby steps.
See what happens, right? And the fact that it's going to be Phil Hester art is very exciting. I think Phil is a very progressive and different kind of artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have always enjoyed his work. His stuff on The Wretch, I think, was fantastic.
Some of the best stuff out there.
Independent-wise.
Yeah.
And kind of kooky also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was very good. So I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds good. Let's take a step back a little bit now to movies again. We'll go back to comic book movies.
Wait, Matt. Hold on 1 second. Before we go on, apparently Mr. Fantastic feels that my report about the Ant-Man book that's coming out was incomplete.
A little lacking, maybe?
What was that, Mr. Fantastic? You wanted to know all the characters in the Marvel Universe that Hank Pym has been? Is that what you want to know?
To enlighten him.
Hank Pym has been Ant-Man, Giant Man, Goliath, Yellow Jacket. I think that's it.
I think that's it. That's the only ones I can remember
Ant-Man,
right now.
Ant-Man, Giant Man, Goliath, and Yellow Jacket. I think that's all. And Hank Pym.
And Hank Pym. Mild-mannered scientist.
That's it. Yes. Does that satisfy you, Mr. Fantastic? Is it okay if we move on now with the new segment?
Please do. Move on.
All right. Go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. So we were talking Sin City 2. Which is tentatively scheduled to come out 2007. It looks like Frank Miller hard at work on what it's going to be and what it's going to include. And it looks like a lot of the characters from the first movie are going to be making an appearance in Sin City 2.
Stands to reason.
Sure. You're going to see Marv again, Dwight, Shelley, Nancy, Manute, Gail, the Old Town Gang. Looks like the storyline he's going to be focusing on primarily is A Dame to Kill For, which I believe is the second book.
Second book out
in the series,
seven or eight, whatever it was,
something like
looks
that.
Looks like I guess he's going to go back and tell some of the stories that he didn't tell in the first movie.
Right. Well, I think A Dame to Kill For actually, that's exactly what it did. It kind of backtracked and took place before the events with Hartigan and Nancy,
okay.
Stuff like that. He's also toying with incorporating the Blue Eyes story in, which I'm not actually familiar with. I haven't read that far into the Sin City.
Okay.
Stories, but it introduces a new character, Delia, some sort of assassin character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually talking about writing something new, specifically just for the movie, that deals with what happens to Nancy after Hartigan's suicide in the first movie, in the first books.
Right.
So that should be interesting. Sounds pretty exciting. You know, Frank Miller, very excited to be working on it again. And he's really a buzz now with the movies. Sin City 1, he's got Sin City 2. Due out in 2007. I think he's got 300 out due later this year.
Did you know that he also wrote RoboCop 2, I believe it was?
Really? Did he wrote the screenplay for that?
He might have written 3 as well. I know I'm pretty sure he wrote 1 or 2 of them. Perhaps Mr. Fantastic can enlighten us as to which ones he wrote up. Mr. Fantastic, anything? Comments? No?
No.
Nothing?
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway. Okay. So
he doesn't know everything.
Well,
how about
it's
that?
Okay. And the last thing that I wanted to mention, just to throw it out there, because I know I am a huge fan. I know that Kevin is a huge fan, would be the Boondocks. They're going to be releasing it on DVD, which I was a little concerned about. I didn't know whether or not it would get the DVD green light, but it's been doing really, really well. And it looks like it's June of this year.
Did
all
they say
15
whether,
episodes.
Is it going to be cut or uncut?
Uncut, uncensored.
Oh, that's good.
Commentary on 7 of the episodes, I believe. Some of which will be with Aaron McGruder and some of the other people, I think, voice actors. And
Regina King, who does both of the boys' voices, which is really interesting.
She might. I didn't actually read who was going to be on the commentary. I can only assume.
Why is it that very popular young male cartoon characters are always voiced by females? Regina King, for those of you that don't know, played Cuba Gooding Jr.'s wife in Jerry Maguire, just as a reference point.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing the voices of both Huey and Riley. And Nancy Cartwright on The Simpsons, who does Bart's voice.
Right.
Why is that?
You know, if I had to make some sort of educated guess, I'd say it's probably because you can use...
young boys sound like older women? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, I don't think they sound like... They sound like older women, but I think it's probably easier working with an older woman in the studio than dealing with an actual kid.
As opposed to, like, the early Peanuts cartoons where everybody sounded like this all the time when they talked.
Exactly. So, you know, they can use someone a little older, a little more mature, probably with more experience.
Instead of assembling all the sentences from the pieces that they were able to get.
So anyway, the episodes will all be in widescreen.
I think I'm going to do the rest of the show like this.
I think I'm going to kill you.
Is that the end of the news?
That would be the end of the news. So check out the Boondocks Sunday nights on Cartoon Network, part of their Adult Swim.
And we'll be right back. Matt, is there a better online resource for action figure news and information than action-figure.com?
No. Actionfigure.com is the premier website.
Whoa, slow down. It's action-figure.com, Matt.
I'm sorry? Action-figure.com is the premier website for all your toy news, reviews, photos, and it's updated daily.
They have a great staff over there. They're great writers. They know what they're talking about. They answer questions that you want to have answered.
You aren't going to find a better source for action figure information on the web.
That's right. So point your internet browser to www.action-figure.com. And go there today. Episode 3D. Harry Potter in 3D? Hell no. Because why waste the time making it a 3D? It's a fantastic, I might say.
There you go.
Fantastic movie. Movies, set of movies by themselves. They don't need 3D to be like, okay, here's another little bell and whistle for you. It doesn't need it because it's a good enough movie on its own, good enough
stands
set
well
of movies on its own. And we have, thankfully, finally gotten a decent Harry Potter movie product. Up till now, I'm sorry to say that there has been virtually nothing. There were action figures, which I found to be subpar, although there were the Quidditch figures, which were pretty good.
The large-scale Harry Quidditch figure, the one that came on the little clear base with the magnetic ball.
That would be from...
I believe it was Mattel, and it was the third movie.
Right.
And that one was really good. I like that one. The best large-scale figure... up till now, I would say.
What I was referring to, actually, was the mini figures that had come out. The regular size action figures, of which I only found the Quidditch figures to be remotely good or interesting, even.
Those are the only ones I have in my collection. The four of them that they did.
Well, thankfully, now, Tonner Incorporated is bringing us their Harry Potter, what are we even calling these? Harry Potter dolls or figures in a, what is that? That's got to be bigger than a foot.
Well, yeah, it's probably a little bit more than a 12-inch scale. It's not 18. It's probably a little bit taller than 12. It's like 13, 14, somewhere in that range.
It's their own.
But it would be the equivalent of, if I would be so bold, a Sideshow 12-inch.
Right.
That's what we're looking at.
We're looking at, well, I dare say the quality is certainly on par or above that, because what you have here, what we're talking about is the Tonner Incorporated Harry Potter figure mm-hmm. that has come out. This is a very, they're limited pieces, they're exquisite pieces, and they are fully rendered museum quality, which is a term that we should put on the glossary. Harry is fully rendered by the Tonner by Tonner Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first one.
I believe
that they
this
put
was
out.
The first one.
They have at least what I want to say, got to be half a dozen either planned or in production now, and they are fantastic. Tonner Incorporated is noted for their fashion. They've done fashion dolls in the past. They have now started to move on to movie licenses. They're going to be moving on into some other very big licenses that we can't mention right now, but we've been given a full rundown. And as soon as we're able to let you know what these licenses are, we're going to let you know because it's very exciting stuff. But let's concentrate on Harry here for a minute. Harry, this Harry that we have here is...
The first of six, by the way, I believe.
I think, but actually, I may have some news. I may have scooped you, Matt,
on this one.
I may have. The Harry we're talking about today comes in his Hogwarts school uniform.
And robes, right.
And robes. And he's fully rendered. He has real hair. He has a great likeness to Daniel Radcliffe, the young man who's been portraying Harry in the films. The glasses, the scar, the entire school uniform is...
All real cloth.
All real clothing.
Right.
Wow, that's really incredible. That piece is just incredible.
And if I remember from talking to Tonner back at Toy Fair earlier this year, a lot of it is stitched, hand-stitched to be real clothing. I think that's really where their specialty has been in the past. With the quality of the clothing and accessories for what was fashion dolls, essentially. But with these new licenses and now going into especially the Harry Potter movie franchise, you know, they're getting into some good stuff. And we haven't seen anything like this before again, which is great. The real feel clothing, amazing.
If you're checking out the pictures either on the podcast or at the home site, which is BigKevsGeekStuff.com, you can also check out TonnerDoll.com. Is that right, Mr. Fantastic? TonnerDoll.com. You can check out the pictures of all their products, obviously, but you're going to want to focus in on the Harry Potter line because that's what we're talking about here. What's been planned so far and what is in production is Harry in his Hogwarts uniform, Harry from...
The Yule Ball with Hedwig.
Right, that's from the...
That's from the fourth movie, Goblet of Fire.
Goblet of Fire, right. Harry, rather, Ron...
In his school uniform.
In his school uniform.
And then in the dress robes, again, from the Yule Ball, Goblet of Fire.
Oh, that's an interesting costume.
The jacket looks just as awful as it did in the movie, but it's great.
Was that at Toy Fair? Did we see that at Toy Fair?
I don't believe that we saw that one at Toy Fair, but I've seen it online elsewhere.
And Hermione, in her school her Hogwarts robes and school uniform.
Right.
As well as her Yule Ball outfit.
Correct. Correct, which I think is gorgeous, by the way.
Now, let me tell you what I found out, my friend.
All right.
In addition to these six, which are planned and in production, and in this case, Harry's already out. I think Yule Ball Harry is also out.
I think he's sold out already, believe it or not. So if you're going to get one now, it's a secondhand deal.
eBay alert. eBay alert. eBay alert.
And that's probably the only place you'll be able to find a Yule Ball Harry.
Okay.
Because they have apparently sold out. And on top of that, in addition to the regular Hogwarts version of Harry, the Yule Ball Harry, FAO Schwartz, apparently, I don't know if they've done this or they're going to do this, they also had a special edition that might have come with an additional accessory or something like that.
Okay.
And they might have had a limited edition one around Christmas also that maybe had a different outfit or something like that.
If I had to speculate, probably Hedwig or something along those lines.
It could be. You have to... Oh, was that the... That's the...
The owl.
The owl. That might be it. Yeah. I'm not sure, but I'm sure they can check at TonnerDoll.com.
Yes.
.com. So they did a special Christmas edition, which apparently they did 200 or 300 of them, and they sold out lickety-split.
Right.
And so, of course, eBay would be a place that you would go to find these pieces if you were interested. And if you are a Harry Potter fan, these pieces, this company, they are making the products that you want as a Harry Potter fan, if you're a big Harry Potter fan.
Right.
Because they're not cheap.
No. I think the price point on these is close to two and a half or $300.
Is that right?
They... Yeah, I think they're that high. I think
well, let me tell you, they're worth every penny.
Sure. Sure.
So here's our little bit of news.
This is your big scoop?
I don't think it's a big scoop.
Oh, it's a little scoop.
In the fall,
mm-hmm.
Draco Malfoy in his Hogwarts uniform.
Very nice. Good touch.
And so I can't wait to see what they're going to do there.
Sure.
And then either around the same time or shortly thereafter, Tonner Inc. will move into their adult characters from the Harry Potter line. And the first one, I believe, is going to be Professor Snape.
Wow. That's huge. That's huge. Easily one of the most liked characters in the book. And I'd be really excited to see how they do the Alan Rickman likeness.
Snape killed Dumbledore, Matt.
That ain't even right. I mean, I've read them, but what happens if some of the listeners have not?
But he kills Dumbledore.
That ain't even right.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Snape, I think, is a great choice to start off with, and I hope that they continue it. And if I had to guess where they'd go from there, it would be Dumbledore or McGonagall would be my...
Which opinion. Dumbledore?
I don't know. I'm going to say the new Dumbledore, because it seems like the school outfits that they're going with and the Yule Ball outfits that they're going with, I think it's a Goblet of Fire and forward license. I don't think that it's a first three Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, right. Prisoner of Azkaban license. So I would have right. to say the new Dumbledore then.
Let's talk about the controversy real quick.
All right.
Now, here's what I know.
Okay.
Harry Potter, according to the book, has what color eyes?
Green, I believe.
Right, green eyes. And the figure here that we're looking at has what color eyes?
They're a little blue.
Now, so here's the point. Here's where we get back to the fanatic response to an issue like this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying that, well, that Harry has green eyes, the doll should have green eyes. Yet, Harry in the films only had green eyes in Sorcerer's Stone.
They use contacts?
They used contacts, which Daniel Radcliffe did not like.
Right.
So they did not make him wear them for any of the subsequent films.
Okay.
Daniel Radcliffe has blue eyes.
Okay.
The doll, which is a three-dimensional or 3D representation of Daniel Radcliffe
mm-hmm.
playing Harry Potter,
right,
has blue eyes that match his eyes in the two in films 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Is that a deal breaker?
I don't think so, for a couple of reasons. The quality on the rest of the piece is really outstanding, and again, to let one small detail, like maybe the eye color, ruin the entire piece, I think would be a shame. Similar to the Vader helmet that we discussed in episode 1 on the Sideshow premium format figure. And also, you know, once you put the glasses on this, you know, glasses are fully removable. It's one of the accessories that come with it.
Right.
You're not even going to notice the eye color.
Right.
If you're looking at it quick. I mean, if you're studying it, obviously you're going to see that it's there, but you're not going to notice it if you're just looking at it quick. So it really shouldn't be a deal breaker. And if you're going to be that fanatical about it, then, you know, you're one of those collectors that it's almost impossible to please.
Right. Exactly. And here was my idea for Tonner.
Okay.
Tonner should do this doll, do a production run on this doll of 200.
Okay.
With green eyes and sell them for $1,000 a piece. And I bet you anything, they'll sell in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I guess.
$1,000 a piece, green-eyed Harry, and they would sell in no time. They would sell out just toot sweet.
But that's promoting that whole... It's kind of promoting that whole, like, chase figure mentality.
Oh, hey now. Slow down.
I'm just saying.
Slow down.
I think that's promoting that kind of mentality.
We're going to get into that whole chase figure issue on another episode. But let's just say this. Isn't that what the FAO Schwartz pieces are? Because here's what I know also. Okay. I happen to know that this Christmas, there will be an FAO Schwartz limited edition Tonner Inc. Harry Potter piece.
Okay.
I don't know that I can mention exactly what that piece is.
Okay.
So I'm not going to mention it. But there will be a piece. It will be terribly exciting. It will come with several different accessories and outfits and things that people will want.
Okay.
Isn't that a chase figure?
So do you want my answer or no?
No. Well, I don't want your answer.
All right.
Because we're going to get into that whole chase figure, variant, paint variant, that whole mess.
Okay.
We're actually going to cover in a very special episode of Geek Stuff next week.
Okay.
Where we're going to devote a significant portion of the show to that whole issue so people can know once and for all what this whole chase and variant and what are all these things. We're going to cover that in depth next week on Geek Stuff.
All right. I'm giving you my answer next week, then.
In episode 4, The Revenge. This time, it's personal. And we'll be right back.
I've been really trying, baby.
Hey there, you sexy geek. Don't miss a single episode of Geek Stuff. Available every Monday at BigKevsGeekStuff.com. You know you want it.
Let's get it on.
You know, I told you.
You know, it was one lousy gold.
Hey, you know, that's all it takes. One lousy gold.
Can you
gold.
Really consider that a victory?
Sure, that's all it takes. The rules are you only have to get the majority. So, you know, one lousy gold, that's all it takes.
Of course, we're talking about Matt and I playing Pirates of the Spanish Main.
Correct.
The
3D.
3D.
Pirate collectible card game.
Yes. We did get a chance to play this weekend.
We did.
And although I did come out strong.
I'll give you that for a first time player.
In the end, I did lose by one lousy gold.
You sure did. And I won by one lousy gold. So there's that, you know.
That's right. Only one.
Yeah, that's right. Only one. And like we said last week, Kevin decided to play pirates.
I had 4 lovely pirate ships.
You did. Some of the some big guns in there, too. You picked your fleet very well. I'll give you credit.
I did take some time. I did some research. I tapped into my pirate lore. And was able to pick a very successful, although albeit not completely successful, but I think a very successful
definitely
group of ships.
About how many packs would you say it took you to get to that point?
Why don't you shut up and move on? Don't worry about
asking.
How many packs it took me.
All right.
Let me tell you something. Opening those packs is half the fun.
Because
there are... There are ships that are more rare than other ships, and I tell you, I want to collect them all.
All the ships?
All of them. I want to have all of the ships from all of the expansions. I want to get this is a nice collection. Now, I don't know that you would necessarily display a collection like this, but it's definitely so much fun to get the ships and put them together and I guess there is something to this thing that I'm a hoarder because I want these ships.
So in addition to an army builder, you are now a pirate ship builder.
I guess that would be really considered under the banner of army building also.
Sure.
I'm building an army of pirate ships or an army of American ships.
Right. American ships being what I chose to play in the game where I, you know, won by one gold, please. Hey, I'm just saying.
One gold.
That's all it takes.
Anyway, my ships were the Carrion Crow.
Nice little ship.
The Longshanks.
Also a nice little ship.
The Sea Nymph.
Good medium-sized ship.
And the Harbinger.
The big guns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one caused some trouble during gameplay. You definitely sunk one of my ships there easily right out the gate. I think it was the Rattlesnake that I was playing. Took her out nice and quick with the Harbinger. But that's why it's a good,
why it really looked like Matt had something to worry about there for about maybe half an hour.
Yeah, well, you know, I do have a little bit more game experience, so there's that. But
I'm going to read.
Are you?
I am going to read. I'm going to read the rules. I'm going to read. I'm going to go over to Wiz Kids Games.
Mm-hmm. That's right?
W-I-Z, wizkidsgames.com. I'm going to learn all about the secrets and strategies, and I'm going to be so familiar with the product and with the game. And, you know, I've reached out. I think I'm going to get some professional coaching. Professional pirate coaching.
Pirate ship
and,
fleet building.
Yeah, and I think that in a couple of weeks from now, I think you and I need to have a rematch.
I'm up for playing whenever you want.
Now, we did a 50-point game.
We did.
Which is kind of small.
Well, yeah, it's a good... A 50-point game is a quick, fast-paced game, but let me just explain what a 50-point game is for people who haven't played before. 50 points is what you're allotted at the beginning of the game in order to assemble your fleet. Now, because this was Kevin's first game, we really used Spanish main rules and we kept it really simple. Although I used some Revolution cards because I said I was going to play an American fleet and the bulk of them really were in the Revolution.
Of course. Set. So, of course, right out of the gate, Matt's cheating by using ships from an expansion that is beyond the expansion that
no, because I did not use any special abilities or special crew from that expansion on the ships. I really just used the ships as an American, so I can have the American fleet. That was it.
That's fine.
And I beat you by one gold.
Feel good about it?
Very.
Still feel good about that cheating victory? Go ahead. Go on with
cheating
your
victory.
Your little description.
Yeah.
Of how you cheated to win.
That's right. Cheat to win. That's my motto.
That guy's dead.
That ain't even right. Anyway, 50-point game, again, is how many points you're allotted at the beginning of the game in order to build your fleet. It includes the ships and the crew members that you'll assemble in order to get the game going. Now, each ship has a point value it's assigned to. And based on some of the abilities of the ship, the size of the ship, number of cannons, number of movement, stuff like that.
So let's try and break. Let's break one ship down.
Sure, sure. Which one do you want to take?
Let's take the ship of mine that wrought destruction upon you. That would be the Harbinger.
The Harbinger, which is a 17-point ship, which is really, that's a big ship. That's a lot of points to allocate to a single ship.
Right.
But the Harbinger really, really is a powerhouse as far as gameplay is concerned.
And here's the great thing. Maybe I'm jumping ahead a little, but I found this very exciting because I did not know this last week when we first discussed it. The way that you measure movement mm-hmm. in the game, like, for example, the Harbinger has...
It's a one long movement.
One long movement is the nose of the ship. From the nose of the ship, you take a standard size card, one of the cards... The ship card, for example, you take that card and you lay it down with the end of it touching the nose of the ship and you move the ship along the edge of the card till the nose gets to the end of the card. That is one long movement.
Correct. And they make it real easy for you. It's color coded. You'll see on the card a long movement is indicated by a red L, and then on the card itself, with the movement indicator, it's a red line on the long side of the card.
And a short movement, or an S, is the short side of the same card.
Correct.
So it's all right there for you.
It's all right out of the pack.
I was really impressed. I can't even begin to tell you.
It definitely makes playing the game easy, playing the game anywhere easy.
And it's what it's really going to do is it's going to make my research and coaching so much more pleasurable and enjoyable, which will in turn make the kicking of your ass in our next encounter even that much more enjoyable.
You're going to beat me by one gold?
No.
Like I beat you by
one gold? I dare say our next encounter might have to go to the death.
Wow. To the death?
To the death.
You're going to make me walk the plank? Is that what it is, Captain?
Your fleet, my fleet, to the last ship.
Oh, we'll have to see. That'll be a long game.
I know.
All right.
If you're a coward, then you don't want
to... I assure you, I am up for the challenge. But why don't we get back to the Harbinger?
Okay.
And some of the game mechanics associated at least with that ship.
Fine. I would want to avoid me too, Matt. Go ahead.
That's right. I'm avoiding you. Because I beat you, so I should avoid you now, right? Anyway. So the Harbinger has a movement of one long. In addition, each ship has a cargo capacity on it. And what that is how much treasure and or crew you could carry on that ship with you around the game board. So in the Harbinger's case, it's five. So you can have five treasure tokens or three treasure tokens and two crew members, something along those lines.
Right.
And then the important part, at least about the Harbinger for attack purposes, would be its cannons. Another little thing in the game is the number of cannons on the ship is associated with the number of sails on the ship. The Harbinger, for example, has five sails, five masts,
right.
I should say, and has five cannons. And each mast has a cannon number assigned to it that lets you know what you need to roll on the die in order to have a successful hit. And also the range of the cannon. Like the movement of the ship, the cannons can have a short range and a long range measured the same way you would measure the ship's movement.
As you measure movement, right.
Right. So you're using the game card again.
Right.
And in the case of the Harbinger, with its five cannons, it's got two long cannons and three short. Which, to the gameplay, is really essential where those cannons are positioned on the ship. And because they go along with the sails... In this case, you have the two longs in the front and the three shorts in the middle. All twos, mind you, which means...
Which means that I needed to roll a two to hit with any of those cannons.
A two or better.
Two or better. Anything above a two or... any, so basically anything but a one.
Correct.
On a six-sided die.
Correct.
And these cannons, as they are represented by the masts, you would then measure from the mast
mm-hmm.
to the opponent's ship.
To a mast on the opponent's ship.
Right.
Right. If your hit is successful, you would remove one of the masts from the opponent's ship. And combat would continue that way back and forth.
Yeah, it really was exciting. It was very, it was engaging.
Well, especially when you took me out right out of the gate.
Sure. I was dancing on air. I had a confidence that can only be measured with some sort of super science technology. And it's just unfortunate that in the end, one gold separated.
That's all it takes. That's all I keep saying.
Me
it. That's all it takes.
From the person who won.
Right.
So I think, and what's great is now they're coming out with another expansion. This is number what? Crimson Coast, we read about.
Two. Revolution was three.
Barbary Coast
was
four. South China Seas. So this is the fifth expansion?
No, sixth.
No, because you don't count the first one as
oh,
an expansion.
Oh, okay. So the fifth
so
expansion.
It's the first one was Pirates of the Spanish Main. Then there were the four expansions.
Right.
And now it's Pirates
of Davy Jones' Curse. Which, obviously, is being tied into the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie coming out this year, The Curse of Davy Jones.
Oh, well, I don't think they're related.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Completely separate
from
each
other. I
think
it's a complete coincidence that the marketing team over at WizKids, who has a very successful pirate game, I think it's a complete coincidence that they are doing a line that has that title and that there is a movie coming out about pirates that may have something to do with it. I think it's a complete coincidence, Matt. I think you're way off base here.
See, now, while you're trying to cover it up and call it a little coincidence, I actually think it's clever. I think it's smart. Why not tie it into probably what launched the pirate craze?
Matt?
Yeah. Yes?
There's probably license issues.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think perhaps you better listen to what I'm saying.
So it's a complete coincidence that the newest expansion is Pirates of Davy Jones' Curse.
Exactly. Complete coincidence. And what's great about this is, you know, since I've already begun my research, actually, 10 minutes didn't go by after I lost that game that my research began, that this expansion is going to introduce even more elements to the game, such as monstrous sea creatures, which are going to be represented just like the ship's little punch-out creatures that you're going to be able to put right on your playboard.
As far as I could tell by looking at the pictures and reading what I've read so far, it looks like the mechanics of the sea creatures are going to be similar to that of ships in that they have certain amounts of movement assigned to them, again, based on the long and short.
Right.
And they also have attacks based or similar to how the cannons work, where you'll have certain attacks that are short range, long range, and die rolls associated with it and on how to hit.
I can't stress enough that how engaging this game is, how fun it is to pop out the ships and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And as a collection, I now have, several ships.
Several's a good way to put it.
And I think they look great. I'm really looking forward to fleshing out my fleets a little more and getting some more characters. And obviously with the new expansion coming out, I guess at the end of this month, or maybe it's sometime.
No. It's I think it's May or June.
Okay, let's say May.
Okay,
I'm looking forward to Pirates of the Curse of Davy Jones expansion in May, and looking to see what those creatures are going to be all about. I don't think we're done with this.
No, actually, I was going to make a suggestion. I think that when we finish our base for the sideshow pieces that we discussed back in episode one,
right,
we should make a playing board for Pirates of the Spanish Main.
Oh, together?
And the expansion. Yeah, we should put it together. We'll make some islands.
Are we going to do the same thing? You'll take your perspective on your website, collectiblebitsbox.com, and I will take my perspective of this process and put it on bigkevscriticaltoys.com.
Right, which means that I will do all of the work, and you will do all of the writing.
Is that what will happen?
Yeah,
I'll do all the writing?
Not so much. Not so much. But no, I think that's a good project. I think that maybe should be our next thing to tackle after the sideshow base.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Okay. I also think that maybe what we should do so that the listeners can get a better feel for game mechanics, maybe we play again this coming week or next week, and we videotape some of the game.
Ooh.
We'll pop it up online.
Some exclusive website content?
Exclusive to the website.
Some video?
It'll be almost like a tutorial. They can come and check it out on our website.
Cool. All right, I'm down with that.
All right.
So this is Pirates of the Spanish Main.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out. You can get some of these at your local hobby store.
Correct.
I think they are in some more mass retail markets.
You will. You'll find them in Target and Walmart stores like that.
So check those out. Let us know what you think. BigKevsGeekStuff.com. You can always drop us your comments there.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know. Let us know how you find Pirates of the Spanish Main by WizKids. WizKidsGames.com.
Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Well, the fame is ignored, action is.
how Mr. Fantastic does that wrong?
No, I didn't know that.
He's just like 5, 4, and then he's supposed to do like show us 3 fingers.
Right.
2 fingers, then 1 finger, and then throw it to us.
Right.
He doesn't do that. He goes 5, 4, and then kind of just when do we go?
You guess.
Anyway, speaking of Land of Confusion, we're gonna get into
death?
It's not a death. It's kind of a...
No, it was a death.
It's not dead, because it still provides us with valuable information, mostly in picture
pretty
form,
pictures,
I suppose. We're talking about Toy Fair Magazine.
Right.
This is from Wizard Entertainment. They put out Wizard Magazine, which I think the premier magazine of the comics industry.
Definitely.
I don't think anybody would argue that.
Mm-mm.
And I guess several years ago... I don't want to even stab a guess as to when, but
I don't know either.
They started Toy Fair Magazine, which, when it came out, in my opinion, the premier magazine of the toy industry.
Well, sure, they took the wizard format and just converted it to toys instead of comic books.
Just applied it over to toys, and it was a great resource for toy collectors and anyone interested in the toy industry. Mm-hmm. My problem is, over the last year or so,
I would say,
Toy Fair has decided to reimagine itself as a humor magazine rather than one that is
a resource magazine,
right? Or dedicated to the toy industry,
right?
And this bothers me, and it bothers me because I used to think of Toy Fair as such a reliable and easy, readable source for information, news, and pictures. And they always seem to have the drop on any other magazine.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's other magazines out there.
Sure.
Like
Tomart's
Action Figure Digest, which is a splendid magazine.
Right.
And Lee's Toy Review, which is not so good, but it's still very good.
I like Lee's, but...
Both of them paled in comparison to Toy Fair before about a year or so ago.
Right.
And here's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
You can go through Toy Fair magazine, and you used to be able to turn right to the news section, which is now called, I guess it's called the Monthly Rag. The issue we're referencing here is issue 105. It's the May 2006 issue.
So I think it's the most current issue probably right now.
I think so, yeah.
New one isn't out yet.
They've often done really fantastic things with humor in the magazine.
Right.
And back in the day when it was a couple of things here and there, they would always have a humorous voice bubble with a picture
where they
set up some crazy thing with action figures doing something.
It supplemented the source material.
Right. It was a nice refreshing break. They then hit on the twisted, what's now referred to as Twisted Toy Fair Theater, where action figures of all sorts, whatever fit the purpose of the strip,
right,
would be used to create this almost comic book or comic strip kind of humorous story. And they might be
two or three pages, a couple panels long.
Right.
That was it.
Something like that.
How long is it up to now?
I'm now counting 6 pages, which again, not extraordinary, in what's a 100-page magazine.
Okay.
6 pages of what used to be really newsworthy, insightful articles have now been reduced to these humor articles. Mr. Six and Burger King inspire creepy advertising revolution. Bush grants self special powers. War on terror justifies use of super strength. Heat vision, says Commander in Chief. Who are the real Ghostbusters that we've heard so much about? I mean, Captain Action, ironically, not getting any.
Right. Well, you know, I got to tell you, the headlines are actually kind of funny, but the stories underneath them are often silly and not funny. And that's not what the magazine is for.
Well, it's at least it was not what it was, at least in my opinion. It's not what it was intended for. It is somehow turned into this because of all the hype behind things like Twisted Toy Fair Theater, which I think is fantastic. Again, I want to stress that I really like many of the elements in Toy Fair magazine. I really like. I mean, there are some that tick me off, and we're going to get to them.
Right.
But, you know, this whole, well, we're not just a toy magazine anymore. Now we're a humor. It's like Mad Magazine with pictures of action figures in it.
Right. And now we don't have the caliber of toy periodical that we used to have.
Right.
And that's what really stinks. That's what really hurts.
And I tell you what it really has done is it's forced me. Now, when Toy Fair was at its peak,
mm-hmm.
I'm almost ashamed to say, being somebody who was so interested, who still is so interested in the industry, I'm almost ashamed to say that only on rare occasions did I actually read another toy periodical.
Right.
But what this change in Toy Fair magazine has done is it has forced me to go out and read Tomarts regularly every month. It's forced me to read Lee's Toy Review every month, and even other periodicals as well.
It's forced me to go right to the internet. I can name half a dozen sites where I can go daily to get the information that Toy Fair used to give me. The press releases, the pictures of the upcoming products, talking about the products. I even have my own site, which kind of does that.
Don't misunderstand us. We still love the photography, the layout,
mm-hmm.
the design of Toy Fair magazine is still fine. They have breaking news. They often show pieces that other people aren't showing.
Sure.
That's all well and good.
Mm-hmm. It's just a shame that they've taken what used to supplement the important material, or what I feel is the important material in the magazine, and chose to make that the primary focus and drive of the magazine.
Right, and no one's saying that all humor should be removed from the magazine.
No, certainly not.
Because, like I said, the little blurbs of humor that they do are really funny.
They were always funny in the past. You know,
the setups that they have
uh-huh.
for some of the figures are really funny. I'll tell you what else I can live without. I can live without pictures of anybody working on this magazine inside the magazine with their head photoshopped onto a toy body, and they're telling an amusing anecdote about some adventure that the editors. I could really do without it.
But I feel as long as it's not excessive and it's not taking over the magazine, it's all right. It's funny on occasion. I get a chuckle out of it. I could do without the increase in the Twisted Toy Fair Theater. I thought it was funnier as a short piece than it is as a long-form piece. If I want something long-form like that, I'll go to Robot Chicken.
And let's also, while we're at it, let's attack top 10 hottest action figures. It is developed into, what are the figures I am never going to find on the peg?
But in their defense, in Toy Fair Magazine's defense, that's not Toy Fair's fault. I think that's Toy Biz's fault, and that's another show altogether.
In this case, but it
seems almost every issue is a bunch of Toy Biz variants. Not to go on a tangent, but that's what it is. And you're right; they're figures we can never get our hands on unless we're willing to pay.
They're the top 10 hottest figures, and most of them are usually figures A that you'll never find on the peg, or are variants.
Chase figures, or something along those lines.
You know, I don't have a problem with that. I kind of like the hot zone where they pick one series that's out now.
Right.
And they, you know, they kind of lay out all the different figures that are in there and they have a little blurb about them. No problem with that. I don't know. It's just, like I said, for me, it has devolved.
Well,
it hasn't evolved into a better toy magazine. It has devolved into a bad humor magazine.
Right. And I think really what the point that we're trying to make here is that Toy Fair is not the Toy Fair it used to be. It's not the resource that it used to be. And it's really completely changed.
We're all happy with the little bits of humor that are sprinkled throughout.
Mm-hmm.
But don't start dedicating mass amounts of pages. Don't increase. If I want increase in Twisted Toy Fair, put out a magazine called Twisted Toy Fair Theater.
Right.
And I'll read it. I promise I'll read it. Don't give me
Don't give me every single page that has a figure on it has to have a humorous voice bubble. It doesn't have to happen every page. It's more special when it happens when it's really appropriate rather than every single page. Every single page that has that isn't an ad and that is some kind of article has a humorous voice bubble.
The only purpose that I have for Toy Fair Magazine anymore would be it's still a good source for some of the stuff that's coming out, and it is a kind of good pulse for what's hot out there right now, and you can use it as that. But for the most part, I don't even read anything in it anymore.
Toy Fair needs to pull back the comedy reins a little and start rediscovering itself as the magazine of the toy industry. And I guess that brings us to the wrap-up of episode 3D of Geek Stuff.
Correct. First today, we had Superman 3D in the IMAX theaters.
That's going to stink.
Yeah. Then we went right into Sin City 2, returned most of the characters from the original film. And the exciting part is Frank Miller writing some new material exclusively for the film.
Can't really get into how excited I am about that because I'm going to have to go back and reread those books, I think.
I'm going to have to reread them myself. And wrapping the new segment up would be The Boondocks Season 1 coming out June 13th on DVD.
Nice. Little racist kids. Cool. I like it.
Excellent.
And we talked about Tonner Inc.'s Harry Potter collectible figure line with the real cloth clothing and accessories. And we're very excited to see what else Tonner Inc. is going to bring us from Harry Potter and other film lines as well. You can check out the Tonner Inc. collection at tonnerdoll.com.
Then we moved right into Pirates of the Spanish Main, you know, where I beat you by one gold piece. And we talked about some of the new expansions coming out, Curse of Davy Jones, to be specific. And we're going to play another game, I think, put some stuff on the web exclusive videos, tutorials, that kind of stuff.
Right, because thankfully we saved the me kicking your ass for the web exclusive videos.
Right. We'll see if that happens.
And finally, we mourned the Toy Fair magazine as it used to be when it wasn't concentrating more on getting humor onto every page or every other page than it was about giving us a great magazine about the industry, what's going on, what's coming out, and so on and so forth. I think it's a real shame. I think Toy Fair really needs to sit down and decide what it wants to be. Does it want to be a toy magazine? Does it want to be a humor magazine? I don't think it's doing both. I don't think it's effective.
I don't think it knows what it wants to be.
Well, let's hope somebody over there is listening.
Let's hope.
So tune in next week to Geek Stuff Episode 4, The Revenge. This time, it's personal.
And on that note, we cue the music.
Shit, I'm stepping in harder this year. Yeah, bear repping in harder this year. Watch watch me as I gravitate. Ha, 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 ha. Yo, we gon' ghost town, this Motown. We're